Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Friday, August 15th. We're already halfway through the month of August. Can you believe it? And so many headlines to get to this morning. First, Trump signs an executive order to make space great again. I love it. And my dad's who is an actual rocket scientist. We actually got him the t-shirt that says, actually, I am a rocket scientist. He would love that, too. And in fact, I should get him a t-shirt. And I should to say, make space great again. So the executive order is aimed to streamline regulation in order to facilitate competition and advancement of our nation's space program. So from the order, it says this: it is imperative that we build on the far-reaching actions taken by my administration during my first term to ensure that the new space-based industries, space exploration capabilities, and cutting-edge defense systems are pioneered in America rather than by our adversaries, ensuring that the United States operators can effectively launch, conduct missions in space, and re-enter United States airspace is critical to economic growth, national security, and accomplishing federal space objectives. You kind of wonder, what are federal space objectives? But the order goes on to say, it is the policy of the United States to enhance American greatness in space by enabling a competitive launch marketplace and substantially increasing commercial space launch cadence and novel space activities by 2030. To accomplish this, the federal government will streamline commercial license and permit approvals for United States-based operators. So that coming from the White House. Meanwhile, there is a court victory for the Trump administration that allows for continued wind down of U.S. aid. This is a good thing, in my opinion. U.S. aid is just beyond spending recklessly and everything that we learned from DOGE. So this victory, surprisingly, comes from the D.C. Court of Appeals. The New York Times said this: a federal appeals court panel cleared the way on Wednesday for the Trump administration to continue refusing to spend billions of dollars in foreign aid, finding that aid organizations had sued to recover the money lacked the legal right to bring the challenge. The decision, which centered on President Trump's authority to withhold funding already appropriated by Congress, handed the White House a significant legal victory. Since taking office, Mr. Trump and his advisors have consistently claimed expansive authority to freeze federal dollars allocated for projects they have endeavored to snuff out, an action known as impoundment that legal scholars and aid groups had considered to be strictly limited under federal law. So that was coming to from the New York Times. And notice how they're framing that, and they're trying to say, you know, that legal scholars, aid groups had considered this strictly limited. And now the D.C. Court of Appeals, of all places, is going, you know, no, the federal government doesn't have to just spend all of this money recklessly. And basically, these aid organizations don't have the legal right to bring that challenge and say, hey, we have a right to this just because Congress allocated it. Doesn't mean that they have any sort of claim on U.S. aid dollars. This is a very good thing for our out-of-control spending budget. But you wonder, where is Congress on this? I mean, we had the one big beautiful bill that pulled back some of this. It also, you know, of course, appropriated millions and millions more for things like ICE, which I think are actually good funding. And, you know, so the conservative position, of course, on spending generally is that we need to be fiscally responsible. And that is not a term that should be designated on any political party or really anyone in Washington, D.C. Of course, there are a few like Thomas Massie, who even with, you know, the ire that he gets is one of my personal favorites in terms of holding Congress accountable and saying, look at the federal deficit. This is absolutely ridiculous that Congress is spending money that they don't have. And, you know, you go all the way back to, you know, people like Barry Goldwater in the 80s, who was talking about how the Uniparty and the Republicans were actually going against fiscal responsibility and a principle of conservatism to say that, hey, we can spend other people's money just because we have the power to force them to give it to us. I mean, that's basically compelled theft. And that's why we get, you know, kind of this this widely held kind of mantra that taxation is theft. And in principle, it can become that. Now, you know, Christians know that we need to pay our taxes. We need to be good citizens. We need to respect, you know, law and order, those types of things. But that has a limit, of course, in terms of where taxation is appropriate versus actual theft, right? And so that's why I think a lot of conservatives are so frustrated that with this, because we would all agree that in general, things that the government is responsible for that we all pay into, like police and fire and, you know, paving our roads, actually things that the government should do for the good of society and community, those are good things. But even then, when the government wants to have a special project and they're thinking like, hey, you know, we want to have this expansion of this road, why can they just allocate tax dollars and even increase taxes, whether it's on, you know, the state and local level or especially on the federal level, to projects that we, the people, haven't agreed to? And this is what Barry Goldwater was saying in the 80s in his book. And I think it was the Meaning of Conservatism, you know, something like that in the title. You can Google it later on Goodreads. But he was basically saying that because the government is not a revenue generating institution, it has to have tax dollars in order to fund projects. But what happens, and what has happened even to the Republican Party, that even back in the 1980s, and, you know, fast forward another, 30 plus years to today, it believes then that the money is endless because nobody in government is spending their own money. This is where personal responsibility has absolutely no common sense in Washington. The federal government especially, and Congress, but even state and local government, they don't have to come to you and me as the voters and say, hey, for example, on this USAID project, if we're spending, you know, millions of dollars funding Arab Sesame Street, is that actually a good thing? Do you, the taxpayers, actually agree that we need to fund this project? And if the majority or maybe super majority do, and we agree on that project, then okay. But right now, Congress and the government have taken so much opportunity and power that they don't actually have to tax and spend on literally anything, and then just increase taxes, increase the federal deficit so much because they have absolutely no accountability for anything that they spend. And so this USAID wind down, it represents maybe the first time in modern history that Congress's and congressional appropriation is actually being questioned. And this is why I think so many genuine conservatives were so excited about DOGE and everything that Elon Musk was doing, because they said they looked at all these projects that we didn't even know about, that obviously the majority of Americans are not going to say, oh yeah, you know, please take money from me and, you know, increase my grocery bill, increase my water bill, increase my property taxes, increase, you know, how much of my hard-earned money that I deserve and I'm entitled to, that's my property, I have to forcibly and being compelled to give over to the government. I then have to spend and allow the government to spend on all of these projects without actual approval from we the people and the voters. So there's this huge disconnect between what especially Congress, but, you know, government at every level, thinks that it can spend money on when we the people haven't actually approved it. I mean, just because we vote for the people in office doesn't mean that we give them authority to do literally whatever they think is their job, especially when it comes to taxing and spending. And, you know, this is where, of course, the whole question of the 16th Amendment and, you know, when America just recklessly got into the Fed and all of these things that happened, you know, in the early 20th century, this is where the enormity of the outrageous, reckless spending and the enormity of the federal government that has just gotten so out of control began. And we haven't seen any real cap on this or kind of a turning back to actual fiscal conservatism. And this is a great move for the Trump administration. And even though, you know, Trump and Elon have kind of had their, you know, their spats and whatever, one of the things that Trump really needs to help Republicans run on in 2026 for the midterms, and then, you know, whoever it ends up with the Republican nomination for 2028, they really need to run on fiscal responsibility, because that's something that really hits home to all of us. And it's a core principle of American liberty. And this comes from the biblical model and the moral that we are entitled to property ownership. That is a right, that is a natural right that is God-given. That includes the money for our hard-earned wages. That obviously includes, you know, our tangible property. And the government can't just forcibly come and take that whenever it has, you know, some random wacky project that that it wants to go spend money on. So this is actually a big deal. I think it's great that the victory is coming from the D.C. Court of Appeals. I'd love to see more of this. And the fact that Trump essentially shut down USAID as and attempted to stop spending that had already been appropriated by Congress, I think is a huge move that isn't getting enough attention by the mainstream media to say, hey, this is one move by the Trump administration that is a call for fiscal responsibility, and we need more of this. We need to ensure that the American people don't have this, I think, right view that taxation is theft, and that there's so much that the government is spending on that is well beyond the scope of even what the 16th Amendment allows. And we need to deal with that at a separate day. But ensuring that Congress stays within its bounds and that we only spend and we only take from the American people things that are genuinely in our best interest. You know, like funding ICE, I'm all good with that. But, you know, funding Arab Sesame Street, all of these other organizations, nah, no way. All right, well, we will be back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. And, you know, it's a great court victory for Trump. I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because Preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now, multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies Preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers Preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year. And they can't do that without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound, the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. This is coming from the Christian Post. Pastor Jack Hibbs warns Christians may need to, quote, pack up and get out of California. If this bill passes, I'm going to ask you to leave the state. So this is Assembly Bill 495. And Pastor Jack Hibbs of Calvary Chapel Chino Hills joins me now to discuss. Pastor Jack, I'm so grateful that you are shining the light of truth on this assembly bill. Tell us why this is so dangerous.
Yeah, Jenna, first of all, thank you for having me. And if somebody could imagine this, that if whatever has always come down in California, bad legislation, bad ideas, bad bills, this is the crowning moment of the Democrat rule in California. This is a bill that, Jenna, it's going to be hard for your listeners to believe this, but it is a bill that grants access to a individual who prints from the government website an affidavit that is in alignment with this bill. You can print it out. You can sign your name and the name of a child in the public school system that you want to receive custody of. You just fill it out. You go down to the school. You request this child's person. The school, number one, is not obligated to contact the parent. Number two, the school does not ask for ID. This individual does not have to produce a background check, a driver's license, an address, nothing. This individual then can take custody of the child, and once that happens, the school is under no commitment whatsoever to reveal to the parents who this individual was, even their name. And so this is why I made the statement to the congregants that if this passes, that as much as I would love people to be at our church, that they would have to take their child out of the state of California if they were going to not put them in either private school or homeschooling. Now, Jenna, I got to tell you, I have been updated with this information, and I don't think I can say the attorney's name, but you know him. He's a friend of yours. He said, Jack, it's worse. It's worse than what you think. It is worse than what you think. So you can tell, Jenna, by the rhetoric online, by those that are pushing back on my comments and now the comments of many others, they're saying, they're exaggerating this. It's not as bad as they think. But the legal minds that have looked at it and continue to look at it are saying, no, it's actually worse than that because it's so vague and dangerous that we can no longer have our children be safe in the California public school system.
This is utterly insane. I mean, this is basically what you're describing, Pastor Jack, is legalized kidnapping. I mean, it's just going in and saying, I'm handing over this affidavit. I'm taking a child as a non-relative even, and the school just has to turn over a child to anyone and then not inform the parents. I mean, what is even the potential pretext to why California would say, you know, hey, we're going to sell this as a good thing? I mean, obviously they lie when they say, like, you know, these kinds of things are good, but what's their pretext here?
Yep. Great question. I'm glad you asked it. And here it is. This is basically an anti-Trump immigration action that has been spearheaded by the California legislature and adored by Gavin Newsom. And here it is. It is an act by which any person can take custody of the child rather than the state of rather than the federal government, because they say it is a compassionate bill. It is a bill that protects the child from being taken by federal government authorities if the parents are illegal aliens. That's what they're saying. You see, it's a good bill, Jenna, because it's our way of making it so easy that anybody can get Susie out of class and take custody of Susie, rescuing her from the bad and evil immigration officers of Donald Trump's ICE and DHS, because their parents could be illegal aliens. Here's the thing. The devil, in this case, Jenna, the devil is not in the details. It is so vague that anybody with that affidavit can utilize this and for nefarious reasons. And so, I mean, this is a pedophile. I'm sorry to put it so bluntly, Jenna, but this is a pedophile's dream come true. If some guy has been eyeing your daughter or your son from down the street of your house, and they happen to know your business hours or your work hours, that guy can go to your kid's school and without being questioned, take your kid out. And the school, you're going to have to find your child because the school is under no obligation to notify because they believe that they're working in part with this legislation as a compassionate act to protect this child and or illegal parents from the mean orange man.
Wow, that is so utterly disgusting, but also so typical, I think, Pastor Jack, that that the pretext is always orange man bad. You know, it's always just, we're anti-Trump and we're sold, you know, according to the state of California and the leadership there. But this is so fundamentally against the right of parents to safeguard their children and to determine who, when, and where can have, you know, temporary custody of them for purposes, you know, in this case of education, and to think that a non-relative in any case, I mean, it's not even just if they have proof that the parents are illegals or that the parents have been taken by ICE or, you know, some even modicum of rationality that would be a correlation to this nonsense. I mean, to just say that anybody can come for any child for any non-disclosed reason with this affidavit, I mean, that's beyond insane. And yet, it has a likelihood potentially of actually passing in California?
Well, here's what's going to happen. And please, all of you in 49 other states, please listen up. This is what happens when the California government is unchecked because it is a Democrat supermajority. The Democrats own everything in California, so they don't any longer have to put anything to the public for vote. They just rubber stamp things through. So, Jenna, here's where we're at. It has been making it through committee, and it is going to make its final showing on Friday this week, and it's going to be approved. And then on Monday or Tuesday, it will then go to Gavin Newsom's desk to become law. The reason why you and I are talking right now, Jenna, is because Tuesday, I am asking everybody in the state of California, I mean everybody, to show up at the state capitol. We've got a permit to do this, and we are going to rally at the state capitol, and we are going to be doing what we've done before in the past, Jenna. Not all attempts have failed us. When we have shown up in force in Sacramento, Newsom has backed down in the past. He has actually tabled his voting power to put it into law. He's actually kicked it down the road. And here's the fun part about this. Gavin Newsom is actually a politician, which means he actually goes with who makes the biggest noise. And so if he looks out his window and sees 5,000 people, which has happened before, and he sees that we are against this, he's got presidential aspirations. And so I'm asking all of America to pray for us on Tuesday, and I'm asking all of California to show up on Tuesday at 9 a.m. at the state capitol. I'll be there among others, and we are going to address the governor, and we are going to make our voice be heard, because like I said, for many of us, this is the last stand. If it passes, then a parent can no longer assume that they'll be able to pick their child up at the end of the school day, that their child will even be there.
Wow. And so this is next Tuesday, so that would be the 19th, is that right, of August?
That is correct.
So the 19th of August, 9 a.m. Pacific, Sacramento, the state capitol. If you are in California, I would encourage you to be there. As Pastor Jack said, that he has a permit. And I know from speaking to state legislators around the country, if they get even 10 phone calls on an issue, they are like, oh, somebody's paying attention. If they get 100, they're really paying attention. But if you get 5,000 people outside that are parents that are saying this is not okay and we will leave, that makes national news. That makes Gavin Newsom, who's probably eyeing 2028 and wanting to look a little bit moderate, That makes him very uncomfortable, because I think you're right, Pastor Jack, that ultimately he's a politician, which means that you can't count on anything that he's going to do. And we as Christians can use that to our advantage to hopefully encourage him to do the right thing in this case. And so this is Assembly Bill 495. And is this, to your knowledge, is this just for picking up kids from school, or could this be from like daycare, after school activities, or are there any limitations?
That's a great question. I'm gonna default and answer you this way. Our legal counsel has told us that this, written so vaguely, is a attorney and a liberal judge's dream come true, because it can be applied in so many different ways. So I guess to answer your question, is it appears that it could be used for any adolescent or child situation where the ploy or the supposed intent is that we're protecting this child by taking this child from the authorities because there's an illegal parent involved in the mix. And yet it doesn't exactly say that. They do say that's why they wrote the bill.
And I think we're... go ahead.
We
lost you for just a couple seconds there, Pastor Jack. So you were saying, you know, this is why, you know, they're writing the bill. And in my view as well, in reading of this, this may even include childcare staff at a church, for example. You know, you have somebody coming in. Here's an affidavit to the childcare staff of a church. What happens in that instance? Yep. I mean, I know what your church is going to say, but
yeah, but you are exactly right. Here's the thing. Where does it apply? To whom? Is there anyone exempt from this? There's this blanket affidavit. Gosh, I'm sorry. I should have sent it to you, Jenna, before the program, because I actually have one. It is absolutely ridiculous. It seems to be more difficult to get a dog license than it is to get this affidavit to get some child that might live down the street from you, or like you said, a non-relative can take your child out of school without you knowing if Newsom passes this bill.
This is just wild, and I'm so grateful, Pastor Jack Hibbs, he's the pastor of Calvary Chapel Chino Hills, that you are sounding the alarm on this and that you are informed on this, because this is so incredibly concerning. And you're absolutely right that the left and those in power in the state of California, they care more about who is, you know, licensed to have dogs than they do about children. And there's a reason for that, of course, which is that they believe that the state is the substitute for the parents, and the state can determine welfare of the child. And when they have any pretext they want, they can ultimately undermine parental rights. And that's what's going on here. They are not abiding by the established authority that God gives solely to parents. And Christians need to stand up and fight against that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said.
And so this is called the Family Preparedness Plan Act of 2025, which is, you know, their cute little way of saying this is a good thing, you know, because who doesn't want family preparedness plan, right? I mean, these bills, you can never trust what they're saying. And this, I'm sure as well, Pastor Jack, will face legal challenges if Gavin Newsom ultimately signs it. And of course, you know, you're encouraging people to go to the state capitol, Sacramento, at 9 a.m. Pacific time next Tuesday on August 19th, and to basically have your voices heard, tell Gavin Newsom, don't sign this. But in the event he doesn't listen, goes ahead and signs it, then I'm sure there will be litigation on this, right?
Jenna, I'll just say this at this time. You are correct. We are, we're already circling our wagons. We're talking to the right people. We are preparing ourselves for Newsom to sign it. If he doesn't, hooray. If he does, he's going to need to hang on, because I think there's going to be a lot of mama and papa bears very upset. Then they're going to remind him about this immediately, and certainly when he attempts to run for president in 2028.
All right. So that was Pastor Jack Hibbs on Assembly Bill, or AB 495, out of California, which is a really, really concerning and frankly evil piece of legislation that is making its way through the California General Assembly and likely will pass, according to Pastor Jack, who is there on the ground. And so this is why it's really important not only to pray, of course, pray without ceasing. We absolutely have to pray. That is the best defense and best weapon in our arsenal. Pray that Gavin Newsom, regardless of whatever motivates him, even if it's just, you know, his own personal politics, whatever it is, even if it's not a good faith motivation, that if this bill comes to his desk, he would not sign it, he would veto it, and that would be the outcome. And also on this coming Tuesday, that rally, and Pastor Jack actually just texted me that the start time is noon, not 9 Pacific. So if you want to get there at 9, that's fine. But the actual rally itself starts at noon. So make sure that if you are able, you can come and participate in that. You can go to Pastor Jack's social media at Real Jack Hibbs on X. Of course, he has Instagram, Facebook, and all of that to find out more about that rally that will be in Sacramento at the California State Capitol on Tuesday, August 19th at noon Pacific time. And we'll keep you updated on all of this, of course, as it is winding its way through the California Assembly. And I'm so grateful to Pastor Jack Hibbs and others in California who are calling attention to this kind of absolute nonsense and, frankly, you know, terrifying type of legislation for parents and children that is completely undermining the purpose of government, which is to protect parental rights, protect children, and not have the state just arbitrarily come in and change, you know, who can have custody and all of these other difficult things. So again, it's Assembly Bill or AB 495. The rally is in Sacramento at the state capitol starting at noon Pacific time. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, so let's welcome in my good friend Josh Hammer, who is the author of a brand new book, Israel and Civilization, host of The Josh Hammer Show, and a syndicated columnist, senior editor at large at Newsweek. And Josh, you posted there's a well-orchestrated info op right now that is trying to tear apart Christians and Jews. It is evil and must be defeated. I couldn't agree more. What do you see as the info op, and what should we be aware of?
So there's a lot of moving parts here, Jen. I don't pretend to have all of the pieces to this puzzle to put it all together, but it's really started to pick up in recent weeks. So there was this whole allegation of a historic church in Samaria, the AKA the quote-unquote West Bank, in a town called Taiba, that they said that quote-unquote Israeli settlers had torched, had committed acts of arson to burn it down. And this spread like wildfire all throughout the internet, and all the usual suspects, all those who are inclined or are already disinclined towards U.S.-Israel relations, seized on this story and ran with it for miles and miles. It turns out that it was literally just a lie. There were investigative journalists that went on the ground, then ultimately, I believe it was Mike Huckabee himself, the ambassador, who went there. The church was not touched. There was an accidental fire in a field adjacent to the church. And then you had that, and then you had the situation in Gaza, where terrible accident of war, a Catholic church was accidentally struck when an IDF mortar shell misfired. These are the tragedies of war, Jenna, of course. This is why Hamas should not have started this war in the first place. And then you had the Pope, who really kind of seized on this and was tweeting about it nonstop for a week while totally ignoring the massacre of Christians by Islamist radicals in Syria. And then you have here on the domestic front here in the United States, you increasingly have a lot of people, and Tucker Carlson has really become the one-man tip of the spear of this effort, of just trying to brainwash a lot of young, vulnerable Christians, a lot of Gen Z Christians, maybe even young Christian men above all, to essentially just hate Jews. I don't really know how else to say it there. That's basically what I see when I look at the platforms of people like Tucker Carlson. He's hosted folks who are trying to resuscitate various stripes of replacement theology, trying to advance the argument that the Old Testament and the New Testament are not merely irreconcilable, but are at some sort of fundamental loggerheads at one another. Really, he's had guests who have actually made this claim that the Old Testament should have no bearing whatsoever in the way that Christians think. And Jen, I know that you personally feel quite strongly differently about that, but you know who else feels quite differently strongly about that? The American founders. I mean, what is inscribed on the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia? Leviticus chapter 25, thou shalt proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all the inhabitants thereof. I mean, how about the fact that Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin both proposed that the national seal of the United States be Moses parting the Red Sea with the Israelites fleeing Pharaoh's Egypt behind them there? So all of this is deeply ahistorical. It is completely not rooted in the biblical ecumenicism that has always defined this country going back to its very first days. And it's really, really, really fundamentally evil stuff. And it's a complete opposite, Jenna, of the argument that I advance in my book, Israel and Civilization, which fundamentally argues that Western civilization is largely synonymous with our ecumenical biblical inheritance. And if we want any chance at to turn back the tide against the real forces that are trying to subjugate us, the Islamists, the left-wing wokists, and the globalists, then it's going to take all hands on deck, all the biblical religions, Jews and Christians, standing shoulder to shoulder, because only with that biblical fortification will we have any chance at turning back the tide. But it's really nefarious, and I think really at its core, if you scratch people like Tucker Carlson enough, Jenna, what I think that they would admit with a little bit of truth serum is that they actually see the most natural ally for Christians not as the Jewish people, the original people of the book, but as Islam. That is what I actually think is the actual stance here. You see that a little bit come out with folks like Andrew Tate as well, who has allegedly converted to Islam. But it's really nothing less than an assault on Western civilization itself if you define Western civilization, as I do, as a joint biblical ecumenical inheritance of the original people of the book, the Jewish people, and, of course, the great Gentile offshoot, Christendom, and Christians themselves having been the folks who have actually built Western civilization. So it's just profoundly evil stuff, Jenna, and we have to defeat it. We really have to defeat it. Really, really.
Yeah.
Do.
And I really appreciate that well laid out kind of history and what got us to this point, because I see this in the broader vein of people like Tucker Carlson and, a lot of these kind of MAGA bros as framing this more as America first, basically meaning Israel last, or we don't even contemplate Israel, and somehow our allies don't matter. And they're framing it that way. But I think what they really mean, and you hit on an important thing that they're very, people like Andrew Tate and others are very pro-Islam, is that they actually are rejecting the entire worldview underpinnings of what makes Western society great and what makes genuine liberty and freedom and the principles that are predicated in a biblical worldview that generated this society and the American Constitutional Republic as the principles of freedom, particularly religious freedom that you can only have in a Judeo-Christian context. And the reason that I think a lot of these people like Andrew Tate are so attracted to Islam, and they don't want to say it as overtly, a lot of them as overtly as Andrew Tate does, because it still kind of recoils a lot of Americans, rightly so. What they're really aiming for is power and coercion instead of religious freedom and liberty and the principles to say that within a well-ordered society, we have the freedom to do what we ought. And it's not the state coming in and telling us how to worship and believe. There are separate jurisdictions. And under Islam and Sharia law, it's not that at all. And I see the Christian nationalists, and I put that definitely as, the CNs, that whole under Stephen Wolfe and others, as this coercive element that really aren't talking about the Judeo-Christian founding, the principles of our founders, Western civilization. They're wanting to use all of these dog whistles frankly, to advance this notion of ultimately a totalitarian society that is very coercive, that they're framing and they're trying to sell as America first. And so they're trying to make people like you and me have to defend our support for Israel, have to defend our support for the American founding. And this is a very, very dangerous thing, that this op, as I see it, the actual objective is a totalitarian society that's built on a religion of their own view that is a lot more akin to Sharia law and Islam than it is to Western civilization and freedom and liberty. Do you see it the same way?
To an extent. I'm Jewish, obviously not Christian, Jenna, and I actually maybe even have less of an issue with the Christian nationalist label, perhaps, than you do, somewhat humorously. But it depends how it's used. Stephen Wolfe, who wrote a book a few years ago, he's a bad apple. Stephen Wolfe is definitely a bad apple. He gets extremely close to outright anti-Semitism, if not going there right away there. I do have many friends in good faith who use that term, and I happen to agree with a lot of what they say. You know, as you know, Jenna, I recently co-authored a law review article calling for so-called separation of church and state to be overturned. So I really do believe in a much more robust public-facing form of biblical religion in America, which is typically going to mean Christianity, because that is the predominant religion here. And as a religious Jew, I not only am comfortable with that, I actually affirmatively support that. But you're right that there are some people that definitely are trying to go all in a slightly different direction there. And for them, Islam is – I think you're correct, actually. I think Islam is a somewhat attractive example. They wouldn't necessarily want to say that. They wouldn't necessarily even kind of think that out intellectually, but they kind of sense it in their viscera and their senses, because Islam means submission. That is literally the meaning of the word Islam. You can actually compare that with Israel, which is the other name given to Jacob in the book of Genesis. Israel means to struggle with God. Islam means to submit. It is a religion, Sharia law, a legal system of full-on submission and coercion, subjugation. So, I think from an American perspective, and, you know, kind of the paradox of all this is we have a President Donald Trump who's all in on America first, right? And we have some of his would-be purported cheerleaders, people like Tucker and others, who are screaming America first while they are giving fluff interviews to people like Andrew Tate, people like the literal president of Iran, you know, like weeks after Iran actually fired 12 missiles or whatever it was at Al Udeid Air Base, the American military base outside Doha, Qatar. And, you know, I mean, square that circle with me. I mean, how can one be America first while clamoring and apologizing for the Islamist enemies of America, while trying to actually separate, the Christians and Jews, the two biblical religions? I mean, none of it makes sense. It really, really does not make sense. And I don't claim to know exactly where it's coming from. I do think that there is some money swirling around here. I definitely think that Qatar and places like that probably are doing some of the work here. I suspect that there are probably left-wing forces like Soros who are involved in some capacity here. Again, I don't claim to have the receipts on this. It's kind of just my speculation, but it all seems to be very, very coordinated. You know, a lot of folks other than Tucker seem to have flipped in fairly short order. You know, Matt Gaetz, former congressman from Florida, now host of One America News Show. I mean, I was just on Matt Gaetz's show back in March when my book Israel and Civilization came out. Very pleasant segment. He actually, you know, Matt described my book as a battle map to save Western civilization. It was really high praise. We had a very friendly interview. And now he's tweeting about Jewish supremacy. So, I mean, you know, that's like a 1930s Nazi-esque phrase, right? That's literally out of Der Stürmer, like Nazi newspapers, this notion of quote-unquote Jewish supremacy. So something really dark is happening out there. And again, I think it's incumbent on all of us, Jews and Christians alike, who believe in the beauty and the necessity of our joint shared biblical inheritance. We have to fight it with, frankly, with all of our might.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to go back to one thing that you said, Josh, about Christian nationalists and that term. And regular listeners of this show will know where I'm going with this, because I agree with you that there's a lot of people who use that term and they do so in good faith. They say, I'm a Christian. I'm also patriotic. I'm very America first. So that means I'm a Christian nationalist. And that's not what Stephen Wolf, as you rightly describe him, as a bad egg, and I agree with that. That's not what he means by that. And I think there's a difference between people who use that term, not really understanding how it has been weaponized, frankly, as sort of a term of art. I mean, kind of like Black Lives Matter. Like, we know that as a movement. And if people would say, well, don't you believe that Black Lives Matter? And we would say, well, of course, all lives matter, you know, all of this. But it's the overall worldview of what the phrase itself and the term means. And so for the people who are using Christian nationalists, they're not talking about what you and I are talking about, where, yeah, separation of church and state needs to be overturned. We want to have morality in society. We want to enforce the biblical worldview framework in our policy. All of those things are good, but you and I aren't advocating for a theocracy. We're not advocating that, you know, religion and one church controls the state. That's what these Christian nationalists are arguing for. So I just want to clarify that, because I agree with you on that. And I think that's also why a lot of these frankly bad faith actors who are promoting a lot of this anti-Semitic rhetoric are doing so very underhandedly, because they're not actually coming forward and saying, this is America as we want to shape it later, and this is what we really stand by. They're using these terms like America first, like Christian nationalists, you know, all of the things that, you know, Tucker is saying, and they're not being as blatant as some of the people like Stephen Wolf and Andrew Tate are, to push forward their model to reinvent America as this totalitarian society. And so I think we need to be really careful, and why I agreed with your post saying that this is really an info op that's trying to tear apart Christians and Jews. And so in just the last few minutes I have with you, what are some of the red flags that listeners should look for and recognize when they're being manipulated into this division, so that we can keep a correct, you know, Judeo-Christian Western civ view and not be taken captive by something that maybe seems well-meaning but ultimately is getting us off track?
Right. So there's a lot of moving parts here. So part of the issue, and I should have said this at the outset of our conversation, is that there are outright lies and propaganda being presented by corporate media outlets as well. Right. So we saw this with the New York Times blasting this photo on the front page of this boy in Gaza. You could see his spine, his rib cage. He looks horribly malnourished. Turns out the boy has a genetic muscular condition. Okay, it is nothing whatsoever like starvation. In fact, his brother, who was just off camera, they conveniently cropped out the photo. His brother is nice and well fed. You know, and frankly, Hamas themselves were pilfering all the aid. You know, as Mike Huckabee joked on Piers Morgan's show yesterday, you know, Hamas is so well fed that they frankly should get on an Ozempic diet, if anything, right there. So, I mean, part of this is just gratuitous misinformation, this sort of Hollywood propaganda that the Palestinian Arabs have been successful at trying to dupe vulnerable Western minds for many, many years. So that's part of it when it comes to the actual situation in Gaza. And allegations of quote unquote starvation, famine, all of which are just routinely just demonstrably false. I think the bigger and more nefarious piece of the puzzle, and this is one that I, as a Jew, it's not really my place, of course, to tell Christians how to interpret the New Testament, how to interpret Christian scripture there. But I'm increasingly really on guard for folks like Tucker who are trying to revive certain forms of theology that have the effect, whether it's incidental or intentional effect, of trying to basically get rid of any notion of the Jews being a chosen people, of anything special whatsoever about the Hebrew Bible itself there. And these are forms of theology, Jenna, that have never taken off in American soil. The Christianity that has always flourished in America for 250 years now has been a Christianity that has had no issue whatsoever with reconciling and fusing the Old Testament and the New Testament, again, the American founders, Abraham Lincoln, I mean, spoke of Americans as a, quote, almost chosen people. Lincoln's public speeches repeatedly cited the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible. In fact, even more so, most scholars would argue than the New Testament itself there. So, you know, this notion that the Hebrew Bible is not part of the American inheritance is completely anathema to the United States. So I would encourage this audience, you know, a Christian audience, to really, really look out for folks who are trying to gaslight you and try to tell you that the Hebrew Bible and the Old Testament is not part of the American tradition, because it 1,000% is.
Yeah, well, really well said, Josh Hammerin. We've got to leave it there, but I so appreciate your time and commentary. I think you've given people a lot to think about, and I agree with you that we have to take the full counsel of Scripture, and this isn't just about ignoring our true heritage. It's about understanding the Western tradition in light of the full Scripture, which of course includes the Old Testament. So you can follow Josh Hammer at Josh_Hammer. His book, Israel and Civilization, get that. It's a really, really good read. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.